You hear me, Essie? We're not doing this again. We're not doing it again.
You're listening to a Cult Talk Network podcast.
File access granted.
Three fucking times. We're done.
Three times.
Hello, all you believers, idealists, skeptics, and all those who question the universe around them. I'm Bailey.
And I'm Ty. And this is Cult Talks Conspiracy, Summer at Sea 2. This is the third episode in our annual summer event where we make you question everything before you go back into the water.
For the second time. Did you ever hear this expression, like, first is the worst and second is best or something like that?
Never heard that.
There was this one girl, and this was back when I was in pageants. And
Sounds
it was
like a loser talk.
Yeah, it really is though. Like, it really is though. And then this
coping mechanism.
This story is absolute proof of this, because when I was in pageants, it was an anniversary pageant. I think it was like the fifth pageant of like that specific corporation. And the second queen, because they had the first year queen and then they had the second year queen. Well, after the first year queen had got done talking, the second year queen was like, "Well, you know, they always say first is the worst." And we were all like, and then the first, which was the worst, ended up becoming Miss Ohio. And then the second actually has moved out to California and is still trying to compete. So,
jeez, damn.
So a little bit of pageant shade there. But we're not here to talk about pageants today. We are here to talk about something extremely grandiose and amazing and beautiful. And that is Leviathan.
Terrifying. He is terrifying.
He is absolutely monsters. Terrifying.
Yeah, that's our back-to-back sea monster episodes for Summer at Sea. So
yeah, Pensacola Sea Monster. Fill. Yeah, you really are getting your fill though. And if you haven't listened to Pensacola Sea Monster yet, you really need to, because like there were points in time where Ty's like, "Bailey, are you there?" And I'm like, "I'm here. I'm just listening. I'm enthralled."
That was a fun one.
That was great. You did an awesome job.
I'm excited to hear about Leviathan, because I've always heard like the term Leviathan, and like I know Leviathan. It's a an 80s sci-fi horror flick with Peter Weller and Ernie Hudson. I know it from that. Anyway, I know Leviathan as a term for just like big sea creatures in general. Kind of umbrellaed under that term of a Leviathan. But I've never heard, I haven't really explored too much into the religious or the biblical origins of the creature itself. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to hear that.
We are definitely going to take you down all those beebs and bobs today, because we're talking about the origins of the Leviathan. We're also going to talk about biblical scripture. There's also numerous cultures around the world that we're going to mention as well that bring up a Leviathan-esque kind of creature. And that is something that I will always harp on, is the fact that when multiple cultures have the same sort of thing, and it goes back hundreds, thousands, millions of years, and we know that technology and communication is probably the best it's ever been today, or probably the best it's ever been in history. So if you go back like a million years and you find this creature in a lot of different similar texts all across different cultures, to me, that rings some truth. Like that means
definitely
like
adds some credibility.
Absolutely.
Like. Because it's very rare for, especially back in like, you know, ancient times, for cultures to kind of, I guess, share different things. So, I mean, that's always interesting, because I mean, it makes you wonder, like, how did these different cultures and different regions of the world pick up on the same thing? Because there wasn't email, there wasn't internet, there wasn't a way for them to look up and be like, "Oh, there's this thing over here called this," and then that kind of spreads their culture. It's like, no, it had to have been, had to came from somewhere.
Yeah. And there were some cultures that if you were trying to spread like your belief or like the different monsters that you had seen and whatnot, there were some cultures that would like completely demonize you for that. And, you know, I mean, we're not going to name names, but we know who you are. But, you know, I mean, and shit like that was happening. So, I mean, you have all of these cultures that are talking about almost the exact same thing And you also have some cultures that, you know, you're kind of not allowed to talk about it. Like, or, you know, you have people making up, you know, familiarities, and it's just super cool and super, super interesting. So we're going to do that. And then we're going to tell a couple stories, and then we're going to talk about pop culture, and we're just going to have a good time today.
I'm excited. I'm excited to hear about the Leviathan and its origins. I want to hear about this thing.
All right. Well, then I think we are ready to unseal this file. What do you think?
I'm ready. I'm ready to dive right in.
Well, without any further ado, let us unseal this file number 046, Leviathan, King of the Sea Monsters. So, did you know that Leviathan actually predates biblical scripture?
No, I figured that was where we kind of start the story.
No, we actually go all the way back to Mesopotamian myth. And in Mesopotamia, Leviathan literally means writhing or twisting one. So,
okay, like a snake?
Like a snake. Yeah, absolutely. Which we'll make references to serpents and snakes again a little bit later in this podcast. But I do want to point out, not only is this the second episode that we have done that's kind of reptilian-like. We did reptiles last year for my birthday. It's absolutely amazing. Reptilian Elite. It's beautiful.
It's a really good episode.
Oh, thank you. I love that one. But this is also, you know, kind of calling back to how many reptilian myths and sort of mythology is what I was thinking. Are out there in culture. Cause you know, you see a lot of it with like turtles and snakes and even some lizards. And, you know, it's really interesting to me when, you know, we start to see a lot of the same types of animals, line up.
You can look at reptiles as like, you know, there's some religions. Isn't there like a religion where it's like the turtle is like a creator?
Yeah. Yes.
Or it's like a celestial being. It's, you know, behind creation. And then, you know, of course, you have the serpent in the Adam and Eve tale.
Absolutely.
You know, all these different reptilian creatures have these impacts on human development in some way. So it's super interesting that when you think about it. Then, of course, you have the conspiracy myths, like you mentioned, reptilian elite. You know, these malevolent creatures that are manipulating human advancement. It is very interesting to take into account how much, how much these reptilians like have over our like just our lore in general.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, if you look at like old architecture, like I know in India, and then I think some in Egypt as well, like in hieroglyphs, you do see some depictions of different reptiles. Which is really interesting because like these buildings are so many thousands of years old, and you have what you can clearly see as a reptile, just as clearly as you can see man on a painting. And it's really cool to, you know, dig a little bit deeper into that because we're shit. Humans are shit at keeping history. We have so much of our own history that we just don't even know. So it's like, I bet there's a giant piece missing of what we're seeing on these different hieroglyphs and in these different architectures. There's probably a giant piece that we are missing, which is so sad.
Or being covered up.
Or, yeah. That's a different conversation. So even after Mesopotamia, we see the Leviathan creature kind of start to come back again in Syria. Syria at the time was actually called the city-state of Ur-Garit. A powerful serpent-like creatures appear in clay tablets, which would make up the Baal myth or the Baal cycle, where the god Baal would slay and destroy a dragon named Lotan. In another text, Anat's Baal's sister would strike down the seven heads of the twisty serpent sea monster. So again, another Leviathan reference. Also, something that I want to bring up as well, there is an undetermined amount of heads on Leviathan as well. And we see that kind of all throughout history. You know, in biblical...
So multi-headed, apparently.
Multi-headed in many different cultures. Now, biblical structure or biblical scripture, we see mostly like just one head. Like, it doesn't mention multiple heads or anything like that. So we assume it's one head. But even in Greek versions, the Leviathan was actually mentioned in Job as well, and that was even further confirmed with Greek text as well. And with Greeks, it was a hydra that they would reference back to.
Like an infinite amount of heads, right?
Oh, yes. Hydras. Oh, yes. Well, hydras are a little different because there's anywhere from, I think, 9 to 16, if I'm sure.
Am I thinking of something else, or they multiply heads? Like, if one gets taken off,
two grow back.
Two grow back?
Yeah, it's the gray hair rule.
Okay.
Yeah. Which I now have, and I really want to pluck them, but I can't.
I'm lucky enough not to have gray hair. It doesn't run in my face.
Yeah. So. Do you get bald instead?
Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah, I get that thinning patch.
You're just established. That's all you are. Yeah. You're not old. You're established.
Well, once we start raking the cash off of this podcasting scheme, I'll get hair plugs.
Oh, please don't. They look gross. They look so gross.
I know it does.
I have a huge aversion to holes, and I'm going to regret saying this on a podcast, I already know. But, like, when you get hair plugs put in, like, it looks like a bunch of, like, little holes, like, when you, like, spread the hair. I don't know. That's how I remember it. I haven't looked back into it.
It reminds me of, like, baby dolls.
Oh, gross.
Like, hair, how you, like, you know, you can look and, like, they have...
Disgusting. Can't do it. So... Biblical scripture. I don't know why I keep wanting to say structure. Maybe it's because of Christian structure and like my ancestors are like, be a Christian. No. So in biblical scripture, it actually does point to Leviathan being a sea monster and being an active sea monster throughout the book of the Bible. We see it in Job, Psalm, Isaiah, Genesis, and of course in Revelations as well. So God does appear to defeat the beast in Psalm 74:13, and the monster is then represented as chaos, disorder, and even evil itself. There's also some that goes into the deadly sin of pride with the Leviathan as well. However, we have a great big story to tell about God versus Leviathan. It's wonderful, but we'll get into that in a moment. Now, the Hindu spirit, Makara, this was one that I found that, you know, was kind of cool to me because Makara is a legendary sea creature in Hindu mythology. She's also a Capricorn. But the Makara is considered to be the guardians of gateways and thresholds. They have also been seen protecting throne rooms as well as entryways into temples. So this is like the good version of Leviathan. This is like the protector spirit. Now, Makara does appear as the vehicle for the river Ganga and the god of the ocean Varuna, generally depicted as half woman, half terrestrial animal, with its front part being that of a stag, deer, or elephant, and the back part being that of an aquatic, usually being a fish, seal, or even a snake as well.
So like a mermaid? Or?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Okay. So it's kind of weird because, like, it's kind of, like, the front has hooves, but in all the photos that I saw of it, and Deepika, correct me if I'm wrong, but all of the photos that I saw had a human head, like, a very beautiful woman, and then, like, hooves.
Interesting. Okay.
So, modern interpretations are actually related to that of a marsh crocodile or a water monitor. So, in Hindu history and mythology, when Varuna was the god of the seas instead of the god of the ocean, he actually rode Makara, which would be called the water monster vehicle. So worked very, very closely with the god of the ocean / seas.
That just sounds...
Why
are they calling it a water? It just sounds so weird. It sounds like an accessory for an action figure.
It sounds like something that would have come with...
The water monster vehicle sold separately.
Mm-hmm. Battery pack, not included. It reminds me of a bath time toy, in all honesty.
I can see that. I can see that. Well, we can add that. That can be an accessory with the Cult Talk Conspiracy action figure set.
We've called it. We're trademarked. Done. So, I mentioned a little bit about these Syrian tablets that are named the Ball Cycle. So, the Ball Cycle is a story featuring the gods of...
That sounds like a very, very painful sexual a sexual position or a sexual...
The ball cycle.
Yeah. Get you in the ball.
I'm going to put you in the ball cycle tonight, baby.
Exactly. Some sort of like masochistic contraption.
We're just going to keep going, man.
You know, wrap you, yeah, get caught up in the ball cycle.
It's really just a glory hole.
Yeah, I don't want any part of the ball cycle.
I mean, me neither.
Keep them away from me.
No, keep your sweaty balls over there. So, but it's featuring gods from there's a kinetic funktonic religion. It's basically people who worship multiple gods. It's a big, long word. We all know how I go with that. So, but the ball cycle tablets actually date back to 1500 to 1300 BCE. Extremely old. So the tablets were found in the 1920s on the Mediterranean coast of northwest Syria. The stories on the tablet include the myth of Baal and the death of Baal. So you get like a full story of like who Baal is and like all of his different adventures, along with his death when he is defeated. So Baal is actually the god of fertility and weather, especially that of rainstorms. And the name can also mean lord, as well as a term when applied to many deities throughout the ancient Near East. So that was really interesting to me because like that one was kind of a little bit harder to research because Baal can be used as a term of lord. So I did get a lot of different things coming up with different lords and whatnot, but really interesting to see that this serpent sea monster creature dates all the way back to BCE times. And not only that, but you got to give credit where credit is due, and the tablets survived, you know, that's crazy. Funny. So moving on over to Christianity, which is going to be a lot of meat and potatoes on this episode. Ty, you said that you knew that you had heard of the Leviathan through Christianity.
I've heard because I was in church for a while. I mean, I've heard of it in like Revelations, but never like explored the origins, the deep lore. Like I just know it as a character in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
I guess what I call it, but
okay.
I know that, but I know it more so just like as like the umbrella term that monsters, like sea monsters get classified under. It's like, you know, there's like some Leviathans.
Yeah. I think now it's Cthulhu. Like it's a Cthulhu down there.
Everything's got Cthulhu in it.
Everything. I love Cthulhu. I don't want to see him. I don't, but I do love me some Cthulhu. So in Christianity, Leviathan was one of three creatures God created when the earth was made in Genesis, which would represent all of his great power. So Behemoth was the land monster who was very powerful. Ziz was the air monster, also very peaceful. Did I say powerful? He was very powerful, but he was also very peaceful. Ziz, also very powerful, also very peaceful. But there was not just one Leviathan that was made at the time of Genesis to keep each other company in the deep seas. Now, God would actually end up fighting and defeating the female Leviathan after determining that she had become corrupt by an evil entity, which caused the creature to become destructive and just generally nasty in nature. So this was a great struggle, but God eventually destroyed the female Leviathan, leaving his other creations to exist in peace, including that of the male Leviathan.
Hmm.
Now, the male Leviathan was kind of pissed.
Okay.
He's kind of upset. So. Huh?
Rightfully so.
Yeah, his girlfriend just got, like, destroyed. And it's like, you gave me this, so, and then you take it away. So he would become bitter and angry towards God for killing his female companion, and he actually waits for the day that he will battle with God during the time of Revelations.
Hell yeah. Sounds epic.
Heck yeah. Ragnarok. So the Bible actually also talks about how Leviathan is 300 feet long and produces light from its skin and scales. So it's got some, what do they call that? Aquatic fluorescence? Or subaquatic fluorescence?
It sounds like, to me, like it kind of reminds me of like a giant eel.
Yeah.
Right? Like, electric eels like produce
the electricity. Yes, they do.
Yeah, that's kind of what it sounds like to me.
Interesting. So a giant eel. And eels can get up to really big sizes, too.
I think they're one of those creatures that just continue to grow until they die, right?
They just continue to grow, or like they grow as big as their environment will allow them to.
Yes. Yes.
Because I think octopus are the same way, if I'm thinking correctly. I think. No? Octopus are not that way. No? I don't think. I don't remember.
Maybe. I'm not an oceanographer. I'm not an ocean.
We'll ask Essie's dad. We'll ask Papa Essie. He'll enjoy that. So the scales were actually said to be so thick and so layered that Leviathan's skin was said to be one of the most beautiful creations that God had ever made as far as skins go. So God once, you know, he had this 300-foot-long beautiful creature, you know, dead. He decided that he would actually create a canopy out of the skin of the defeated female Leviathan and feed the Leviathan's meat to those in paradise. And those who did not get to enjoy the meat would have clothes made from the skin. Mm. It's actually believed that the clothes that Adam and Eve were given the day that they were banished from the Garden of Eden were made of that of the Leviathan.
Oh, okay. So it ties into that.
It ties right on in. Which, I mean, it does tie in because, like, Adam and Eve are banished in Genesis, from what I understand, because I haven't read the Bible. But it's fine. So we talked about Leviathan is the embodiment of chaos, greed, and envy. It also threatens to eat the damned when they are alive with its enormous mouth and teeth. It actually has been also speculated that the Leviathan's mouth is a portal into hell, is an entrance into hell.
Wow.
It's impossible for a man alone to defeat this beast and extremely dangerous to humans. It's almost as dangerous to that of gods. And yes, I do say gods.
Really? So it's even... Okay, so it's even... It's even a creature that, you know, gods will have difficulty with.
Oh, yeah. Many harsh battles. Many harsh battles. Across the cultural board, there are so many just ruthless battles between, you know, we talk about it, we see it in Norse mythology, we see it in Christianity, we see it a little bit in, Syrian mythology, yes. We see it a little bit there, and it's these epic battles of these powerful gods just being almost annihilated by this serpent creature. And it's quite entertaining, but it's also quite scary because it's like, hey, if you made this, you should be able to put it down.
You would think. You would definitely hope so.
Listen, I remember my mom and dad telling me very frankly, I brought you into this world and I can take you out. And I believe them. I still believe them. Leviathan would just laugh at you. Probably sounds like a hissing type of laugh. So in Job 41, God, I love this story. I love this story because it's so fucked up.
Oh, yeah, Job is one of my favorite books in the Bible because it's fucking insane.
It's just, it really, like... If you are having a bad day and you're like, woe is me, why is this happening to me? And I'm typically not like, I'll read the Bible, but like, just read the story of Job. Just read it. And you're going to understand, like, this shit just happens.
Yeah. Well, that kind of feeds in, because I know there's this idea of like, you're heard of a law cow. Do you know what that is? A law cow?
I've heard it before, but make sure I have the right law definition.
Law cows are like these people on the internet who are just like weird or like, fucked up.
Oh, okay.
But like, people like kind of like obsess over them or like, you know, watch them a lot or they get a lot of views, a lot of attention. And the idea is that these people are like so, you know, bad off that it makes the viewer, it actually improves the viewer's like mood or like their confidence.
Oh my God.
Like, here's a more fucked up person that's the other than me. I'm not nearly as fucked up as this person. That's why they get so much attention, so many views, things of that nature. That's like the psychology behind why these people are so watched. So Job is kind of like the original law cow.
Oh my gosh. See, now I'm going to worry if I'm like a law cow out there. I'm like, are people watching me? Like,
oh, I've seen some law cows. I don't think you're anywhere near.
Is it the same thing as a neck beard? Because I've heard neck beard.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Same kind of thing. Yeah, that's kind of the same mentality there.
Okay.
Same basic thing.
But yeah, this story is wild. Buckle up, slut puppies. So God and the devil made a wager that Job was only so loyal to God because all that he had been given by God. And Job was just like, here, give me more. I'll praise you if you give me more, God. And that was basically like the devil's point. Like, you know, this guy is only with you because, you know, you give him shit. And God said, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Job is my follower through and through. He would go through hell for me. And just like that, a wager was made on Job's life, basically. Mm-hmm. Yep. God would agree to inflict the most terrible things onto Job. He was made to suffer extreme physical, mental, and spiritual all throughout the course of this wager. And I'm going to keep calling it a wager because it is. All to see if Job would still be loyal to God at the end of this. So
I love this story.
Oh my gosh. And like Job is so grateful to God. Like after, like through everything he's given, like Job is extremely grateful to God throughout. And even while he's, you know, being quote unquote punished, by God through this, he doesn't forsake him, which he's a stronger man than I.
Yeah.
So Job would one day.
It's very assuring that, you know, this story tells us, you know, God will do some fucked up shit to win a bet.
For real, though. So, like, I grew up Primitive Baptist.
Really fuck with you.
Oh, yeah. So I grew up Primitive Baptist, which is like old Testament. And so, like, I knew this story, but like, this was like kind of a threatening story. Like, this was what God could do to you, just so you know. Like, God is loving, but God is also angry. So, like, I was taught.
It's like, not even anger. It's not even like Job did nothing wrong.
He didn't do anything wrong. It was just like, we're bored.
Devil just like, hey, let's have a bet. And he's like, all right, I'm going to win. Like, it's not even like a good representation of that. It's like, no, at any moment, God will just like decide, I'm going to really fuck with this person just to prove a point.
My loyal follower, I will absolutely just
ram him. I will ruin your life to prove a point. It's just such a fucked up story.
Listen, we know a couple people like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I will go to the ends of the earth to prove this point. So when Job was finally at the end of this rope, after he had been through so much agony, he asked all of those around him in his village to curse the day that he was born and to even curse the Leviathan in order to raise him from the sea. Now that would get God's attention. And he would speak to Job and show him all of the wonders in which God had created. And we're talking about the lands, the animals, the seas, all of these beautiful, wonderful things. And one by one, God would show Job all three of the beasts that he had made. Starting with Behemoth, second was Zez, and the third being Leviathan. Of course, the most terrifying of all three. Now, God would go on to sort of poke at Job, and I have the script right here, but it's written in Old Testament, so it's going to be a little difficult to read. But he basically says, can you draw out Leviathan with a hook? Can you say sweet things into its ear? Could you hook his nose? Could you, could you speak soft words unto thee? Basically, like, you can't do that, but I can because I'm God. And because I made that, and you should trust what I have in store for you, because look at all of these wonderful things I have created, which depending on where you lie on spiritual religion and all that, you can take that how you will. We're just going to leave it there. So ultimately Job would not forsake God, and seeing Leviathan would definitely be like, oh, okay. I see you're almighty and powerful. That's great and wonderful. I'll continue to follow you. Please don't sick that puppy on me. And, you know, all would be well with Job. And he would go on to live a wonderful life. And hopefully he literally got a castle in the clouds for having to go through that shit.
I would hope he gets something out of it. When he got up there.
I wonder if it's like a big secret in heaven that it's like, hey, don't tell Job about this. Like, don't tell him. Don't tell him it was a bet. Oh, that's a joke, Job. I'm sorry. That's a joke.
Yeah.
They didn't do that to you. It was totally just to test your will to God in order so you could get into heaven. It absolutely wasn't that. No, you're good. So we see poor another guy. I know, the poor dude. So we see another mention of Leviathan again in Psalm 74, when one of the authors speak, why have you rejected us to God? And I say one of the authors because Psalm actually has about 10 different writers. So in this one, it's a little unclear who is speaking. But they basically go into the greatness of God and when they're speaking about him and speak about when he crushed the heads of the Leviathan and gave food to the creatures in the desert. And at that point, he's talking about when the Israelites were freed and they were given the meat of the Leviathan. They were also one of those ones in paradise that were given the meat and the skin to wear as clothing. It was basically used as an example to ask, if you're so strong and powerful and I followed you so faithfully, why are you not here fighting for us? God would hear that cry, and the author at the end of this would still be a devout follower of God after seeing all of his wonders.
Wow. Okay.
So, I think it's really interesting that we point to these, rather the Bible, points to these big giant creatures as some of the most grandiose and beautiful creatures that God has ever made. And it's like, us as humans, like, as far as I know, have never seen them. So maybe it goes into a little bit of that faith that, you know, not a little bit, but a lot of that faith that you have to have in knowing that these creatures are out there. But, you know, I don't know. Cause like that's probably just a difference of opinion because like I value the land and what I can actually see on the earth, you know, cause the land has its own history and personality into it. And yeah, these creatures are great. The stories are wonderful and whatnot, but I'm more of a see it and believe it kind of gal.
No, I'm the same way. Like I said, I don't really have too much like, faith and religion and things of that nature. That's just not something I really buy into, but, you know, I'm more of a see it and believe it, but yeah, I believe in shit like aliens and
for real, yeah,
Sasquatch, and sea monsters, and all this stuff. Not ghosts, but I believe in all this stuff. But like, I don't know, it's a weird thing. I was in religion. I've done that stuff. I was in youth groups, and just as I grew, matured, and you know, became more aware of my surroundings and things around me, I just never bought into it. So I mean, it could be one of those things that maybe it's like, you know, sight by faith kind of thing that we don't see these because there's a lack of faith. I mean, it's very interesting to consider that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Kind of like in the Polar Express when the adults can't hear the bell because they don't believe in Santa Claus. I know that is a really like juvenile thing to compare it to, but that was the only thing I thought of.
Yeah, that's a very good comparison though.
Nice. I'm glad you liked it. So moving on from Christianity and going on to the Greek side of things, I kind of wish I'd been born Greek, to be honest. It just seems so fashionable. Like, I feel like I was like, my Alma would have been so happy if she like had been born Greek. She's Hispanic. Don't get me wrong. Like the Hispanic blood like runs deep with my Alma, but like just the drama of being Greek. Well, identify as Greek. It's fine. I bet I get in trouble for that one.
That's appropriate. You can't be doing that.
No, I know. That's not appropriate. We can't do these things. So it's fine. I won't do it. I'm an American woman. Thank you. So the Hydra in Greek was described by the ancient Greeks as a multi-headed creature that was enormous in size and had venomous teeth and would strike fear into the hearts of all men. Offspring of the mother of monsters, I will now be going by that. In Chidna, the half-woman, half-snake who dwelled in a cave, its father, Typhon, a great serpentine monster that was once the most dangerous beast the gods had ever faced. So
yeah,
I've
heard of Typhon. I think that's from Hercules.
Yes, that is exactly the story we're getting ready to tell. So the attributes that the Hydra gained from its mother would be, he's got the VHS copy of Hercules, guys. He's just like, here it is.
On deck.
We're ready. We are ready. You know, Hercules used to freak me out as a kid because of the scene with the Hydra.
Really?
Like, it scared the crap out of me. Like, I mean, I think my mom would actually, like, have to skip it because it freaked both me and my older sister out. Now, my younger sibling, they were like, oh, yeah, give it to me. Like, give me all the scary stuff, which, knowing the little monster that thing is now, yeah. But the attributes that the Hydra would attribute from its mother would be that of flesh eating and savageness. So it got its eating habits and its behavior from its ma. And the attributes from its father would be its immense size and multi-headed quality. So we have a lot of the personality and behaviors from the mother, and then we have a lot of the physical attributes from the father as well.
Okay.
So much debate actually sparks on how many heads the Hydra actually has, whether it's 9 or 50, but in our upcoming story, the depiction of the Hydra is with 8 slayable heads and 1 immortal head. So we have 9 heads.
It's got one that's like, is like, no matter what,
unkillable.
This one cannot be killed. But the other ones are just disposable, basically.
Yeah, and then those eight heads, they can sprout more heads. So I think that's why there's a bit of a debate on why there's either 9 or 50, because it could start with 9 heads, but grow up to 50 at one time.
Jesus Christ.
Just my own little theory there. So we're going to talk about the goddess Hera. And Hera was married to Zeus. Now, why Zeus got married, I don't know. Because Zeus was a little hoe. And Hera was not happy about it. So Hera was actually said to have adopted the Hydra in order to help in the demise of Hercules, the demigod son of Zeus. Now, it's important to note that Hera was actually extremely angry with Zeus and his affairs, along with the children that were products of his affairs. So she would not only take out her rage on the mothers, the women that Zeus had slept with, but she would also take out her rage on Zeus's children as well. So she would actually raise this Hydra in the swamps of Lerna, where the beast would live and grow. And it was said to be an entrance into the underworld, again, making reference to Leviathan possibly being, Leviathan's mouth, rather, possibly being an entrance into hell.
Damn. So it plays more back in that hell mouth thing, mm-hmm. that the biblical, I guess, incarnation of Leviathan, yes. had as well.
Oh, yeah. We need Buffy. We need Buffy up in this bitch. Like, oh. She's very familiar with Hellmouse. So when Hercules was performing his famous 12 labors in order to become a god, this would actually be the second impossible task that King Eurystheus would have him do. The first task was actually to battle and defeat the Nemean lion. And when Hercules brought the lion's head back, the king was like, well, shit. And decided, like, okay, I'm going to have you go after the Hydra. That's going to be your next task. See if you can do it. So Hercules went into that unknowing that Hera had actually raised the beasts with the possible intent of this specific battle. So we don't know if Hera had knowledge that Hercules would be coming to fight the Hydra at some certain point, or if she was planning to sick the Hydra on Hercules at a certain point, or if it was just a catch-all for any one of Zeus's little sperm banks that he had.
So he has had like a plethora of different offspring.
Oh yes. Yes.
I'm not that well versed in Greek mythology. I think I've brought this up several times when I've been talking with Eric on,
mm-hmm.
I think back in like some episodes of Ash, I've called Campbell, I think it's came a few times.
Yeah.
I know very little about the Greek mythology, aside from what I've seen in Hercules and things, mm-hmm. of that nature. That's like the extent of my knowledge of Greek lore.
I don't know a whole lot, but I do know that, yes, the gods would come down and have relationships and affairs with human beings and create these demigods. There was also with humans. I'm a little unclear on that, on whether it was period or it was just in matters of war because of how powerful the gods were. And that's about all I know. Not gonna lie to you. So Hercules, when he would go to face the Hydra, He would actually use a cloth in his mouth as to not breathe in the poison emitted from the beast, because the teeth on the Hydra were so poisonous that even the breath of the Hydra could infect someone with its poison. So you couldn't even really get close to this. You had to be very, very mindful of what you were doing when you got close to this animal. So he would actually use, he would fire flaming arrows into the Hydra's lair to draw the beast out. And this had worked as it intended. The Hydra then charged out at our hero. Using several weapons, Hercules would decapitate the heads of the beast, only to find that every head he cut, two more would grow back. So the fight would continue, and Hercules would have to call on the help from his nephew, Iolaus. Iolaus would suggest that if they could cauterize the wounds at the moment the heads were cut, it could prevent new heads from going back. So he would take his flaming arrows and use his sword, and they would immediately cauterize the wounds once the heads were cut. And this method would actually work, leaving the one immortal head remaining after all other eight necks had been cauterized. This one would actually take more drastic measures. Hercules would use a golden sword given to him by Athena that was blessed with her divine magic. This would slay the beast, and Hercules would actually dip some of his arrowheads into the beast's poisonous blood, creating now poisonous arrows. Now, in other versions of this story, the immortal head was still functioning after being decapitated, and Hercules would then take a giant rock and place it on top of the head, imprisoning it forever, unable to grow, unable to cause havoc in any other form. So our hero would win against the Leviathan. But this is another epic tale of someone going against this enormous serpentine creature. And having, he had to call in, two other gods for this. And, I mean, Hercules is, you know, granted, a demigod. He's not up at that level. But, I mean, he was legendary. And so, I mean, these fucking things are not to be messed with at all. And now we're going to talk about my favorite thing in the entire world. Norse mythology. So excited.
Doing I know even less about Norse mythology than Greek.
I am learning
new to me.
I am learning every day on Norse mythology. There are so many wonderful, wonderful books.
Here's a hot take I have on Norse mythology.
Go for it.
I have never cared to learn about it, mainly because of the douchebags who make that their personality.
Oh yeah. I'm a Viking.
I just can't buy into it. Yeah, I can't. Any interest I may have had to explore mm-hmm. Norse mythology, it just got tainted by the the tattoo sleeved giant beard necklace that mm-hmm. I'm sure they have no idea what it actually means mm-hmm. hanging from their neck, and that's their entire personality, is they're a Viking or a heathen or whatever the fuck mm-hmm. it is. That completely dashed any interest I had in maybe learning about Greek mythology.
Yeah,
it just got tainted. I feel like Greek Norse people need to reclaim their culture.
Yeah,
these douchebags, because it makes it so unappealing to me.
There's I actually was just watching a video by Freya Norling not too long ago, and she's wonderful. I love her. But she is a Sami medicine woman, shaman woman, okay. Excuse me. Okay. And she had talked a little bit about, you know, the people who had made being a Viking their personality. And, you know, she was kind of talking a little bit more about the physical aspects of it. And she was like, don't walk out in the snow barefoot because you think you're a Viking. Even the Vikings covered them. So, I mean, and I do apologize if I am misquoting her. I truly do. But you know, it's kind of, and then there was also other people who are like, read your books, anyway, it's one of those things where it's like, you can tell the people who have read the literature and the people who haven't read the literature, because.
Oh, you grow a beard, you buy a chintzy necklace off of Temo or AliExpress, and you you talk about swinging an axe. And yep. You're a Viking.
You're a Viking now. That's all you got to do. Yep. Wear some wolf fur, and you're good.
Yeah, some faux imitation fur that's probably not even from a wolf. You just throw that on your shoulders. Yep. You're good to mm-hmm. go.
Yeah. No. Mm-mm. No, if you're looking to start, there's plenty of YouTube University videos that, you know, kind of break down the Posetta, and it's really good. I used some of those. They were great. There's also really bad ones, so watch out for that. But Norse mythology, we talk about Jormungandr, and he is also known as the Midgard serpent or the world serpent in Old Norse. And he is an unfathomably large sea serpent encircling the earth and biting its own tail. So if you can imagine a snake that is all the way around the earth and is biting its own tail, and it's like completely intertwined in a circle, that is the Midgard serpent. By the way, if you don't know what Midgard is, it's Earth. We are one of the seven realms, and ours is Midgard. And of course, Asgard and Valhalla and everything is all in there as well, but we're not here to talk about that today. So we first see evidence of Jormungandr in the Posetta, which was mentioned. Loki had three children with Angarmna, the first being Finnir the wolf, the second, Hel, the goddess, and the third, Jormungandr, the serpent. Now, Odin would eventually ban all three of Loki's children from Asgard, assigning new residents to each of them, all of them different and spread all throughout the realms. Finrir, would be chained to a boulder by chains made from dwarves and a jaw holding his mouth completely open.
Jesus.
Did I say sword? I think I said sword.
You said jaw.
Oh, I said, yes. His jaw would be held open by a sword going directly through it so that he could not bite. Now, the chains were made by dwarves because dwarves were said to be the strongest masonry that you could ever get throughout metals. And they would actually trick Finrir into getting to that boulder, and they would chain him and he would not understand what was happening. But ultimately, it was for fear that one day Finrir would turn against the gods. And because he was so big and so vicious, it couldn't happen. That when he was a spawn of Loki. Loki is a very trickstery god, very mischievous as well. And he's just...
I think, you know, all the negative you can say about the MCU, I think at least they did probably do a pretty good job at... depicting Loki.
I think so.
For a majority of the MCU.
I think so as well, honestly. And I think part of that goes to Tom Hardy as well.
Hiddleston,
excuse me, I'm so sorry. Yep. Tom Hardy's a babe, though. We'll just get
Tom
that out
Hardy
there.
Was Bane.
Was Bane. He's, Bane's right, a babe.
He, I think he's also, I think he's also Venom.
Yep.
I think Tom Hardy's Venom.
I'll just never forget his line from Peaky Blinders. You fucking what? That is an amazing scene. That is an amazing scene. But Tom Hiddleston, yes, wonderful. He did a wonderful, wonderful job. But yeah, they do a lot of really good job of making him mischievous and sort of untrustworthy as well. And that kind of is how Loki is. He's very trickstery. If you're ever making offerings,
it's kinda like he's like the trickster.
Yes, it's funny because
that's like his thing.
Yes. His offerings that you can make to him, and do your research before you start making offerings to different gods. Like, please don't do that to yourself. It's actually like rum and coins and candy and like just things like it's almost things that like, of course you're not going to give rum to a kid, but like, you know, little coins and candy, you know, just kind of like,
I wonder if that plays into like sin, you know, like greed and gluttony and.
You know, I never thought of it that
things
way.
Things of that nature, rum, gold, mm-hmm. candy, all these things can mm-hmm. be negatives to humans.
Yeah.
So I wonder if it's kind of part of that.
I never thought of it that way, but that's very interesting. Oh, his second child, because he has got three. Now we're on this second. The second would be Hel, and she would actually be sent to the underworld. And I love Hel because she is a bad bitch, and she comes back. I'm going to go ahead and spoil the story for you guys. At the end in Ragnarok, Hel actually comes back with an army of the undead that she now rules, because if you're going to get sent down there, you might as well come back out ruling.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's like, okay, we'll do this. And Jormungandr would actually be tossed into the sea that encircles Midgard. So we got Jormungandr. We got the giant serpent. That's us. And he was not nice. However, Odin would not be the main enemy of Jormungandr. That would actually be his son, God of Thunder, Thor. Da-da-da! So Thor once encountered a giant king, and he challenges Thor to a number of different challenges. The first being a drinking challenge, which Thor was actually greatly amused because, you know, give me another. Like, that's him. He's golden. He's going to pass. Great. So the giants handed him this drinking horn, and Thor would actually take 3 big gulps from it, and he would still be unable to empty the horn. So the giants would laugh at Thor for being unable to finish such a measly horn, and Thor would insist on another challenge. So the king would oblige him, and the king would ask Thor to lift his cat, incoming Fluffy. So Thor went over to Fluffy, and he would attempt to lift the cat from the floor. And Thor, the god of thunder, would only be able to lift a single paw from the floor, unable to lift the remainder of the cat. Again, being beat by the giants, Thor asked for one more challenge, a physical fight. Strength versus brutality, if you will. So the king would present an elderly woman, one that would possibly match the strength of Thor. So unfortunately, Thor would be defeated in that fight. But the giants would take pity on the god and allow him to stay for the evening. Like, you know, we kicked your ass, so come stay with us. It's all right. We'll mend your wounds. We'll give you actual drinks. You'll be good. Plus, you know, he's a god, so don't get on his bad side. However, the next morning, the king would actually confide in Thor, telling him that he actually used magic during the challenges for unfair advantages against the god. The horn that Thor drank from was actually that of the ocean, which he was drinking, draining hundreds of thousands of gallons with every gulp that he took.
Wow.
The giant's cat was actually Jormungandr that he tried to raise from the ocean. And the old woman was actually age itself, which no one can escape. Thor was so furious at the giant king, he raised his hammer in order to strike him. But in the moment that the hammer came down, the king once again used his magic and disappeared. Thor would never again see the giant king. However, he did vow revenge on the king for his trickery. So, it is actually speculated that the giant king was Loki in disguise. He was trying to raise his children in order to bring forth Ragnarok. And this would also explain why Thor would never encounter the giant king again if it was Loki in a disguise. Also, just the pure context of the story, the trickery, the admittance to using magic, the getting away at the very end, the, you know, telling you at the very end how I defeated you. And it screams Loki. But we don't know for sure. Yeah. Now, I know we talked a little bit about Ragnarok.
It's very plausible.
Oh, absolutely. And like, it's right up the alley too, because Loki would be the one that would want to raise Ragnarok. Now, why would Loki want to bring forth Ragnarok? Because while Thor was the enemy of Jormungandr, Odin and Loki got beef because Odin never trusted Loki. He banished all of his children, and he's just not happy with him. He's just like, nope, fuck you. So Ragnarok is the Norse end of days. It is the final battle between gods and demons and giants, in which the end will result in the death of the gods. So in the end, Fenrir will break his dwarven chains and become free, and he will actually defeat Odin. Hel will unleash an army of the undead onto the gods and onto Midgard. And Thor and Jormungandr will have one final battle, while Jormungandr will be defeated by Thor. But Thor will sustain so many venomous wounds that he would not survive another battle. In fact, only making it 9 steps past the beast before finally collapsing and dying.
Damn.
So I do find it very funny that we keep seeing the number 9 pop up in these stories in association with the world serpent is, you know, along with the Hydra. So we're going to look up number 9 numerology.
9's a pretty big number in numerology, right?
Exactly. I think it means completion, if I'm not mistaken. Yes!
That makes sense, yeah.
Powerful and represents completion or the end of a cycle.
I know that's a big part of the 9 members in the Fellowship of the Ring.
I didn't know that. I mean, I probably did know it. I didn't know it. No, I'm not going to be cocky like that. So we talked about all of these wonderful myths and all of these beautiful stories. Let's talk about one sighting that we absolutely do have. And I'm so upset that we don't have more on this other than just a quick snippet in a captain's journal. But we do with what we can. In World War I, there was a giant sea monster sighting. A British steamer is a...
I think we talk about this and you talk about this a lot, like in depth last year, right?
Not this one.
Pretty sure. And not this one? Okay.
Not this one. There's another World War I. That one.
Naval monster.
Yes.
Naval encounter to sea monsters. You should check out from last year's Summer at Sea.
Oh, yes. That one is super interesting. That one was Japanese, I do believe.
Okay.
This one is British. So a British steamer is attacked off the coast of Ireland by a Germany U-28 submarine. The steamer was actually sunk by the sub. The captain of the sub actually witnessed the entire submersion of the steamer and would write about it in a log. And there was a number of underwater explosions that was believed to be due to the ship's boiler exploding. This threw a crocodile-like creature out of the water, estimated to be about 60 feet in length.
Damn.
It was twice the size of the croc in Lake Placid, by the way. Just so you know.
Fun facts.
So it had tiny underdeveloped legs and pronounced nose and snout with rows of teeth, like multiple rows of teeth. And there's no other mention of this creature or any other thing like it in this captain's journal. It's just like saw a thing today. But it's funny because, I mean, it's not really funny, but it is coincidental because the Hindu Makara also has ties to being crocodilian.
Okay. So it matches the description pretty closely.
Oh, yes. So in 2015, fossils were actually unearthed from a 480 million year old set of rocks in southeastern Morocco. So these were actually fragments that were found, and they came from a molted exoskeleton that was the complete specimen when they put all the fragments together, measured a little over 4 feet. So it would have been around 5.5 feet long, given the fact that these fossils had kind of shrunk over time and, you know, had dwindled. But that was just a piece of whatever this thing was. It was a back specimen, an ectoskeleton specimen that measured over 4 feet long. So whatever this came from, it was absolutely huge. And it probably came from water.
Okay.
A little further into 2022, a skull fossil was found of a 150-million-year-old sea monster was found on a walk on the beach. And it was just, from what I understand, it was just a little old couple walking down the beach. And they found this skull. And, like, here's the thing. If I find a fucking skull of a plesiosaur, because that's what it was dubbed to be, was a plesiosaur, I'm not telling nobody.
No.
I'm calling Ty, and I'm going to be like, bring a truck.
On my shelf somewhere.
Like, that's leaving. We're mounting that. Yeah. It's, no one gets that.
Absolutely.
So the skull measured about 6.5 feet long and was extremely thick in bone structure as well. But it's very interesting to find, and even if it truly is a plesiosaur, which I do believe it is a plesiosaur, it's extremely, not only rare to find those, but extremely interesting as well. Because there's so much that we already don't know about these animals. And because of the way that land had kind of formed and whatnot, because we see this a little bit with, like, I think we mentioned it in the Lake, I almost said Lake Placid, but it's not Lake Placid. It's
The Pensacola Sea
Monster. Pensacola Sea Monster. I have it right in front of me, Ty. I'm so sorry. Pensacola Sea Monster. We also had a little bit of mention of that when we were talking about how when the earth kind of formed and water disappeared, like all of these big animals may have gotten trapped in like these little itty bitty spaces and like it kind of wrecked ecosystems for a minute. But I think there's like a lot of truth in that as well, because you just have like these huge animals that are in these tiny little places. And we're like, why? How did how'd you get here? So we have that. And of course, there are numerous, and I do mean numerous, pop culture references to the Leviathan. Moby Dick may have actually been inspired off of a Leviathan or just a really pissed off sperm whale.
Well, yeah. And also, you know, a lot of the play of Moby Dick is also from Jonah and the Whale. That's another inspiration, which, you know, that could be some sort of Leviathan creature, you know, the. And that's also where the super whale, the Herman Melville, it's a basically a giant whale that's extinct now. But it's
after. Was it a Kraken? Was the Kraken also suspected?
It was a whale.
It was a whale. Okay.
Oh, maybe. I mean, I'm talking about the Jonah and the Whale.
Okay.
Then Herman Melville. There's that whole correlation there. But Kraken, I mean, could be. It was swallowed up, Jonah.
Yeah.
For all we know.
So I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not familiar with Jonah and the Whale.
I'm very little and just based off of like pop culture
stuff. Oh, okay. Okay. I got you. Okay. Very interesting. It is very interesting to think that all of these big creatures that, you know, we could have seen or even like the Bloop, especially like could be a Leviathan as well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, and we talked about the bloop last summer at sea. Ty did an amazing episode of that. We had the Julia one scared me the most.
Slow down. Yeah, there's a ton on there.
Yeah, that was an amazing episode.
Talked about.
Yeah, that one is great. But it could be that the Bloop is a Leviathan. Or it's a really
Yeah, yeah. I know the Bloop is often depicted as like a Leviathan-y creature. Like that's.
It would have to be. Kind of,
they hope it to be.
Not like I'm gonna my littlest shortest friend Haley. That's what I'm gonna call her from now on. The little pistol shrimp. She's not loud, but she is a pistol. So, and of course, we already mentioned the 1989 sci-fi film, The Leviathan, directed by George P. Castamos. And then we have so many video games and creepypastas. I'm pretty sure I could make it through a level on a video game and get out from the Leviathan. Because if you search Leviathan history, first thing that's going to pop up is video game stuff. So you got to get through all that.
Yeah, yeah, I know Subnautica is like the big one. That's like the big game where Leviathan is like featured heavily in. Or like a Leviathan, I think it's called the Leviathan. There's a big creature in
Subnautica. I want this game now. Oh, it looks cool. I want it. Guys, my birthday's almost here. I'll have to play that. That's cool. I've been getting into gaming more recently.
Oh, really? Nice.
Yeah, I started playing Helldivers. So... And like, okay, so like, this is a big side note, but we're here at the end, so it's okay. I started playing Helldivers because I'm a big Starship Troopers fan, and I really, like, the Starship Troopers lore in the Helldivers lore is similar. It is not the same. Managed Democracy.
No, you can check it out. Check out Cult of Lore. They did a episode on that back in May.
May. Yeah, I was pissed I wasn't on that episode.
Helldivers episode.
I was pissed. I straight up told that. I was like, how dare you talk about Starship Troopers and not put me on that episode? Like, that's horrible. That was almost just as bad as H.P. Lovecraft, but I kind of outscheduled myself for H.P. Lovecraft, so I don't hold that against him. So, yeah, that's really cool. But here we are at the end of our ginormous tale of Leviathan. What do you guys think? Do you guys think that the Bloop could be a Leviathan? Do you think Moby Dick was inspired off of Leviathan or was just a really... pissed off sperm whale, because sperm whales do have a temperament. And, you know, do you guys have any more stories about the Great Leviathan, any creepypastas. I love those types of things. But Ty, what do you think the Leviathan is? Do you think the Leviathan could still be swimming around there?
I think so. I mean, I think it's very interesting. This creature has appeared in so many different religions and different cultures. I mean, when there's something like that, it has to be based off of something. There has mm-hmm. to be some origin to it. And it's super interesting to think there could be this giant creature that may have existed with humans or still exists with us. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's always interesting. That's one of the most fascinating things about the ocean. Mm-hmm. That's what draws me to the ocean, is just this idea that there's so much unknown, unexplored. You know, the old cliche, we know more about space than we do about our own oceans.
Yep.
I mean, cliched, but true. And maybe there is something huge on there. We just haven't seen it, or you know, those who have seen it haven't reported it because they're gone. They got swallowed up.
Yeah. If you live to tell the tale.
Yeah, it just adds like the terror and the like fascination with the ocean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think it could still be down there. I am always of the side I want it to be real. Just because I think the world is too big to not have. I want to believe so bad. I definitely think it could be down there. Do you ever like sit and watch like 10 craziest things found on like deep sea cameras or something like that? Because like I watched.
I used to, but I get frustrated by them because it's always like just nonsense.
Yeah, it's clickbait.
I always get annoyed by them. Yeah, it's all clickbaity. Mm-hmm. I used to like be really into those, and there's nothing but clickbait now.
They're creepy. They're super creepy. Yeah, like, I don't even care if it's fake. Like, first of all, I want to know how you faked it because, you know, that's skill. And second of all, it's freaking creepy. Like, the ocean already freaks me out, and thinking that there is probably this enormous creature down there in the deep seas, I'm just like, nope, y'all can have that. I think we have destroyed, or not destroyed, but I think we have inhibited enough of the earth we can leave the ocean alone.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, Ty, I think that wraps it for me.
Yeah, that was great. That was great learning about the Leviathan. A little bit of Greek and Norse mythology that I had no idea about, aside from what I've seen in the MCU or Hercules, the movie. So it's always good to expand on that stuff and like learn a little more about the real context of it. But Leviathan, I think, is just one of those things that's just so enduring. Mm-hmm. It really is interesting how it just touches all these different cultures and religions. You know, it's something to harp on, but it's just very fascinating when you have things like this that you can see throughout all different mm-hmm. manners of history. But no, this was a great addition to Summer at Sea. We're halfway through our summer event. I into the sea so far. We've talked about a mysterious drowning. We've got two sea monster episodes back to back. And next episode, we are going to be talking about a very interesting, very fascinating, I guess, scientific theory that I've heard of. And I really just find it to be super interesting. And that is the aquatic ape theory. We'll be talking about that. So I'm super interested in that. Very excited to talk more about that in the next episode. But Summer at Sea, we're rolling on.
Yeah.
Cult Talk Net, we're gearing up. We're in summer, but we're gearing up for Cult-tober coming up.
Oh, my gosh.
Make sure you guys check out that feed, Cult-tober Plus, everywhere you find your favorite podcast. That thing gets updated once a month, so I don't mention it enough, but make sure you guys check that out.
There's so much content.
All these past episodes. But make sure you guys follow us at Cult Talk Net across the board, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, X, all the stuff. Keep up to date on all the content we put out, because it is an insane amount of content. Everyone's on vacation. You're doing stuff. If you want something to listen to, Cult Talk Net, I'm sure, has something you're interested in. Bailey Absolutely. And I are here every other Tuesday with Cult Talk Conspiracy. You can find Cult of Campbell or Bruce Campbell podcast. Sometimes features Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Mondays, whenever it decides to come out. And if you're into like Warhammer and deep rooted lore, you guys can check out Cult of Lore, which comes out every first and third Thursday. And those guys do a really good full video episode on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/culttalknet. So make sure you check that out for that added visual aspect. But I'm sure there's a ton more stuff we got coming if it is already out. Yeah. We're recording this well into the past, but yeah, who knows? There's probably something somewhere that we put out that I'm not aware of yet.
Past high is not up with future tide.
Yeah, I'm not up to yet. But no, we thank you guys for listening. Keep with us here. Summer at Sea continues on, and we go into the second half, and we got a lot of stuff in store for the rest of the year. But I think that does it for us, Bailey. Until next time, I've been Tom.
And I've been Bailey.
Question. Yeah.